You can't marry a Lego, Victoria says to him. Moby's face drops in disappointment. Why not? My father points his fork at Moby.
It's not a living thing, son.
So it has to be alive? Moby asks my father. Like the puppies you showed me last night?
My father immediately shakes his head. You have to stick with your own species. You have to marry a human.
Moby pouts. That's not fair. I want to marry the puppies. I laugh. You're learning early that life isn't fair. Took me 17 years. Victoria forks another pancake onto her plate.
This is really good, girls.
It is, my father agrees.
Everyone else kind of mutters the same with mouthfuls of food, but we're all distracted by a sudden banging on the front door. I look out the window and see a cop car in our driveway.
Oh, no.
My dad scans all of us. None of us look him in the eye.
Why do you all look guilty?
None of us speak. In fact, we all fork bites of food into our mouths at the same time, making us look even more suspicious. My father shakes his head and scoots back from the table. No one else gets up when he opens the door. We all just listen quietly.
Morning, Barnaby, the officer says.
Morning. What's the problem?
Well, after we buried Pastor Brian's dog at the church last night, his grave was tampered with, as was Pastor Brian's. Seems that someone moved the dog.
Is that right?
The officer sighs sharply.
Cut the shit, Barnaby. Did you dig up the dog again after we already arrested you for it?
My father laughs and says,
Of course not. I came straight home and went to bed.
The officer begins to speak again, but my father cuts him off.
With all due respect, you're wasting your time. The dog is dead, and it sounds to me like she's right where Pastor Brian would want her to be. Don't you guys have more important things to focus on?
The officer once again tries to get a word in, but my father says,
Do you have a warrant?
Well, no, we just came to speak with you about...
Good. You spoke to me about it. I'd like to get back to my breakfast now. Have a great day, crime fighter.
Our father slams the door. I watch as he makes his way back to the table. It's hard to tell if he's angry or not. He scoots his chair forward and picks up his fork. He stabs at a couple of pieces of pancake and then looks up at all of us.
You're all a bunch of heathens.
Chapter 18.
What should we name them? Moby asks. He's sitting with me in the backyard. Dad didn't say if I was grounded from the backyard or not.
I don't know. Why don't you name one of them and I'll name the other one?
Okay, Moby says excitedly.
He holds up the one in his hands and says,
I'm naming this one Dick.
I laugh. I'm not sure your mom will go for that.
He frowns.
Why not? She named me Moby. I want to name my puppy Dick so we can be brothers.
As long as you use that argument, I tell him. Sagan walks out the back door of his new house and heads toward us. He sits down in the grass next to me. I hold up the nameless puppy.
We get to name this one. Got any suggestions?
Sagan doesn't even hesitate.
Tuck Borny. We could call him Tuck.
I smile. You bury me. I lift the puppy up to my face and kiss his nose.
I like that. Tuck Borny.
Moby stands up and grabs Tuck out of my hands.
Be careful with them, Moby.
I will. I just want to show Mom Tuck and Dick. He cradles both puppies in his arms and heads toward the back door.
Tuck and Dick. If I could be a fly on the wall when he tells her those names.
Moby disappears inside the house and Sagan looks at me.
Want to check out my new digs?
I laugh and fall back onto the grass.
I can't. I'm grounded. And please don't ever refer to that place as your digs again.
You're grounded for how long? He hasn't decided yet. Sagan lays down beside me and we're both staring up at the sky.
But didn't he leave earlier to go run errands? He's not even home.
I face him with a grin. I like this rebellious side of him.
You're right. Let's go check out your new digs.
We push ourselves up off the ground and walk over to the old house. I haven't even been inside in over 6 months since Utah started redoing the floors. It sat empty for so long I kind of felt bad that Sagan was having to live in these conditions, but when I walk through the back door I'm pleasantly surprised. I mean, it needs a lot of work, but it's come a long way in 6 months. Wow, Utah has really put a lot of work into this place. The floors are almost complete. It just lacks the living room floors, and then it looks like it'll be mostly finished. I follow Sagan down the hallway, and he points to Utah's old bedroom.
Utah is taking that room.
He turns around and walks backward, pointing at Honor's old bedroom.
And if he can talk your mom into moving in over here, she'll take Honor's old room.
He faces forward again and stops at my old bedroom door.
And your old room is now my room.
He opens the door and it's a complete mess. All of his stuff is still in trash bags and his mattress doesn't have sheets yet. Some of my old stuff is still in boxes on the floor. I walk over to the bed and fall down on the mattress.
It's terrible, I say with a smile.
He laughs.
I know, but it's free.
He sits down next to me on the bed and his phone rings. Now, knowing what each phone call could mean to him, I'm almost as anxious as he is when he retrieves it from his pocket. I can see the disappointment set in when he sees Utah's name. He answers it on speaker.
Yeah?
Did you take the roll of trash bags over there?
No, they're on the dresser in the guest room.
Okay, thanks, Utah says before disconnecting the call. Sagan falls back onto the mattress and stares at his phone for a minute, then puts it back in his pocket. I pull my legs up onto the bed and cross them, facing him. I want to ask him more about his family, what he thinks happened to them, if he thinks there's still any hope of ever finding out what happened to them. He must see the torn look on my face because he reaches for my hand and laces his fingers through mine.
I'm sure with time I'll get used to it never being them, he says. But I still have hope.
I try to smile reassuringly, but I'm not sure it comes across that way, because I can see in his eyes that he doesn't really have hope left for their situation. It makes me sad for him. I look at the arm attached to the hand that's holding mine. I touch the tattoo that says, "Your turn, doctor," and trace the letters. He reaches up and presses a thumb to my forehead right between my eyes.
"Stop worrying about me," he whispers, smoothing out my furrowed brow. "I've had years to get used to it. I'm okay."
I nod, and then he pulls me down to the bed next to him. I press my cheek against his chest, and we just lie quietly for a while. I want to ask him about what my father said this morning, about how he chose to move here so he could be involved with me, but I also don't want him to know that I know. Instead, I pull his arm closer and trace another one of his tattoos. I touch the numbered coordinates.
What's the location of these coordinates? It's not that hard to figure out. All you have to do is type the coordinates into your phone.
Why didn't I think of that? I reach for my phone and roll onto my back. I open Google Maps and type in the coordinates. 33 degrees, 8 minutes, 16.8 seconds north, 95 degrees, 36 minutes, 04.4 seconds west. When the location pops up on my phone, I stare at it. I zoom in, I stare at it some more.
But I'm confused. The other day you said those coordinates are where you were born.
Sagan lifts up onto his elbow and takes my phone out of my hands, setting it on the bed beside me. He's leaning over me when he says,
"That's not what I said. You asked me if it was where I was born, and I said, close to it.
You said you were born in Kansas. Those coordinates lead to our town square where you kissed me, in Texas. That's nowhere close to where you were born."
"Exactly,"
he says, brushing the hair from my forehead. It's not where I was born. It's where you buried me. I stare at him in quiet shock for a moment. I try to hide my smile, but it's hard when he's smiling right back at me. That kiss was tattoo-worthy to you? He shakes his head. I didn't get the tattoo because it was where I kissed you for the first time. I got it because it's where I met you. He slips a hand behind my neck and then slowly lowers his mouth to mine. But the kiss was nice, wasn't it? He whispers. Our mouths connect, and it's soft and delicate. It's not accidental like our first kiss. It's not deceiving like our second, and it's not frantic like our third. This kiss is the first genuine kiss we've shared, and I want to drag it out for as long as I can. His lips move over mine with patience, and I love the patience in this kiss more than anything else. It means we both know there will be many more that follow. He rolls on top of me, and as soon as we get in the most perfect position I've ever been in while kissing him, my phone rings. Sagan laughs against my mouth and reluctantly pulls away. I pick up my phone and see that it's Honor. I debate not answering it, but I'm actually a little excited she's calling me. We never talk on the phone, so it's just more proof that maybe things really have changed between us. Hello? Hey, she says. Dad just got home. Better get your ass back over here. I hang up and press a quick kiss to Sagan's mouth. Dad's back. Gotta go. He wraps a tight arm around me and pulls me to him, giving me another quick kiss before he shoves me away. See you at dinner, Mare. I smile and run back home. Home. This is the first time I've ever referred to Dollar Voss as home. The end.
Without Merit, a novel, was written by Colleen Hoover and read by Candace Thaxton. Editing and post-production by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, Technical Director. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Without Merit, a novel, is available in print from Atria. Also available from Simon & Schuster Audio. It Ends With Us, a novel, by Colleen Hoover, read by Olivia Song.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.